Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Back again, talking, giving us a little bit of a historical perspective, is Lee Leonard, a retired UPI and dispatch reporter and columnist. He's the author of A Columnist's View of Capitol Square, Ohio Politics and Government, 1969 to 2005. That means about 40 years of columns that Lee has under his belt, and the best and the most interesting, I suppose, or whatever, in a big fat book, because so many of them were interesting. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, you know, we always start talking before Lee gets, you know, before we go on the air, because Lee and I go back about 20-odd years. I used to run to him with a myriad of dumb questions, often when we were sitting in the state Senate, and all of a sudden everyone would start talking or something would have happened and someone said something, and I'd have to go to Lee to get the code, you know, break the code for me. What just happened? What are they talking about?
Well, when you've been around for a while, you get to know why people are talking to each other. And that was always kind of the fun of it. I'm not there anymore, but when you saw one person talking to another and another one across the room talking to somebody else, if you had done your homework, you would know a lot of what those conversations were about. And that's only gotten through experience.
Yeah, I mean, homework and also just experience and just knowing that there's no reason why that guy should be over on the other end of the room talking with that other guy unless something was going on. But a lot of times it was just legislative mumbo jumbo that they were going through. And I would run over to you. I'd toddle over there and go, what just happened? I mean, I can't imagine how many times I said that to you, but you always seemed to enjoy it and it didn't bother you.
No, it was fun. It was kind of like putting the pieces together of a jigsaw puzzle. And you got to know these things.
Now, back in those days, I would look at you or a few other people like Bob Miller and from the Associated Press and maybe John Chalfant from the Associated Press and various other people that had been around for a while. But also you could go to legislators and ask them what just happened, what's going on, and they generally could tell you. Was that the same way as you left the business a few years back?
Well, from what I understand now from talking to the State House reporters, the answer is no, it's not the same that you go to a legislator and they don't know what's going on any more than you do. The knowledge base has deteriorated, I think.
But the legislative, how would I say this, how things operate are more complicated than ever, it seems like sometimes.
Well, yeah, in a certain way they might be, but now the formula seems to be only pass the bills that are necessary. The rate of bill passage is way down, and a lot of people think that's good. Why should we have more laws? Just enforce the ones that are on the books now. But as far as legislative productivity, my understanding from reading about it is that the total product is way down. And then the other thing is they jam everything into the budget or into one big humongous bill and call it law. And that's why the number may be down, because those used to be dealt with separately and have separate hearings, which would be good because you'd get the testimony on the issue. But now it's just let's throw it into the budget.
Amendments at the last minute.
Yeah, or maybe not at the last minute, but
just throw it in the budget. Nobody has time to dig it up.
Well, that's right. That's even more sinister when they do it at the last minute.
The last minute amendments on the floor.
They procrastinate.
Lee was listening to the last show. My guest is Lee Leonard, retired UPI and dispatch reporter and columnist, author of A Columnist's View of Capitol Square, Ohio Politics and Government, 1969 to 2005. How long did you work on that book, Lee?
I think it was about 4 years, and you said earlier that it was probably the best columns. There are some of the best columns, but some of the best ones had to be left out because of the formula. The University of Akron published this, and I had very generous help from the Ray Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the university. And Professor John Green, who's a nationally known political scientist,
right,
he suggested that while you're doing this, tell the story of Ohio government and politics. Just don't throw a bunch of columns in there that you like or all the funny ones. And so I had to have a method, and that took a long while to develop. And there were certain peculiarities about Ohio politics and government, and so there's chapters in there on that. And so all of the best ones didn't get in, but they tell a story, basically, and it's for the student of politics and history of Ohio politics, it's instructive. And then there's also some good ones and some funny ones that like the great and the near great and the good and the bad and the ugly and things like that.
Right.
And about nationally known figures like Woody Hayes and Richard Nixon.
So much of this, obviously, the book is about people.
Correct.
And people who have been around a long time or were around a long time. Enough to write about them and have some perspective on them.
That's right. And there were real characters. There's a section in there on legislative characters, both conservatives and liberals. And I had some fun with that because the characters – I don't think we have the characters anymore. Probably the only legislator who approaches the characters in this book would be Senator Bill Seitz from Cincinnati, and he was there when I
– Well, what about Batchelder?
Yes, that's true. He is. He's a character. And in fact, there's a picture of him in there in the middle of the book among the photos about the time that he put on a muzzle designed for a Doberman pincer because he thought Vern Reif, the speaker, was trying to gag him and muzzle him, and that was his way of protesting. And so that, yeah, Bill Batchelder is a character. But he's such a serious person, too, that I don't really count him as a character because
– He thinks he's –
Yeah, he's a serious – that's very serious.
Even in those suits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even in those ice cream suits that he wears in the summer.
When I first started covering the legislature, I'd say, who's the guy in the light blue suit or who's the guy in the yellow suit or the white suit?
Yeah, and he had a white suit. And Gordy Scherer once, who was a legislator and then a lobbyist, said, Billy, you look like a stick of chalk.
Because he's a tall, skinny guy.
Yes, and then he had that
with his white suit.
He had that cord suit with the blue stripes. Yeah, Scherer is the same one who said, "What do you do at night, Billy? Go back to your room and read the Constitution." And he wasn't far from wrong. I mean, these other guys were out there yucking it up in the taverns, and Bill was back in his room studying the law.
Super smart guy. He's back in the legislature now. He was in the House. And then he retired for a while. And
he became a judge.
That's right.
He was a judge first in Akron. And, I guess all of his time was spent. He was an appeals court judge in Akron. And then he decided he wanted to run for the legislature. He loves the legislative battles. He's an arch conservative. And lo and behold, he's the minority leader of the House. And that's a position that he could not attain in 30-some years. His first time around. So he came back. Now he's the elder statesman. And he actually still looks like a little kid.
He still looks exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's kind of like an alfalfa sort of a face a little bit. But, you know, he couldn't attain that status back in his first round because, of course, Vern Reif was in power for most of that time.
That's right. But even in his own party, he was in the conservative wing.
Right.
And they didn't really start to assert themselves. They tried to assert themselves many times. They tried revolts within the Republican caucus in the House. But they didn't attain a majority until roughly 2001. Mm-hmm. And that was when term limits kicked in. And the conservatives wrested control of the caucus from the moderates.
Used to call them back in the olden days the caveman caucus. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, obviously very pejorative, but also just humorous and fun. And in fact, now his name's escaping me. His last name's Grindel.
Tim Grindel.
Tim Grindel, mm-hmm. Proudly numbers himself among the caveman caucus. But he doesn't necessarily agree with everything the conservatives are doing today.
Right.
So things change.
Yeah, they do. And some of the conservatives are not conservatives on every single issue. They can have some more moderate views.
It used to be so easy if you were just if you're a Democrat, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, you're a Republican. There was the caveman caucus, but basically things operated in a more congenial way. They used to get together at the bars, you know, at night after sessions when they were all in town. Maybe they'd, you know, make sure after they went to all their fundraisers, they'd all coalesce later on at that bar across the street from the State House. Now it's slipping my mind.
Well, the Galleria, it was.
Right. There were a lot more bars downtown.
Yeah, now it's sort of moved out to the suburbs, although there are still some in German Village where they go.
And that's because of the prohibitions on lobbying expenditures.
Yeah,
or the reporting
requirements. The way they do it now is they get together at the fundraisers. The legislators will have a fundraiser, and all the lobbyists will be there. And that's where they have their socialization. They can still go out, but they basically have to pay for their own. And there's rules that are enforced. And if anybody found out that there was wrongdoing there and it was reported, there would be a bad – they'd give them a bad time over that.
Sometimes you have to wonder what – the purpose was, I mean, there was undue influence, and there's the scandals regarding the pancaking. There were scandals that preceded the lobbying rules. But did anything ultimately change? Has the overall influence of lobbyists changed?
Well, I think the lobbyists have found ways to become influential. At first, when term limits first took effect and there were a lot of new people came in, they were afraid of the lobbyists and afraid they would slam their doors in the lobbyists' faces and not be seen with them. I'm not in those circles anymore, but I'm sure that the lobbyists have found ways to impart the information that they want to impart without necessarily taking them out to meals and they get appointments in their offices.
Well, a lot of them have the advantage of being around longer than the lawmakers, and
that's true.
They know more.
But even the ones that complain, even the ones that have been there a long time, complain that they had to learn a new way of doing business, and of course that was work for them, and it made them work, and it made them work a little harder. But I don't discount the fact that they're still influential, and again, yes. They've cracked down on wining and dining, but the old campaign contribution is still a factor. And when they wrote the campaign financing law, one of the loopholes was for the party caucuses in the legislature. So all they do is dump money into the party caucuses, and then it's doled out to the –
which gave even more power to the party.
It gave –
in a way.
To the caucuses.
To the caucuses, right. We will return in a few minutes if you have a question or comment for Lee Leonard, former UPI, retired UPI and dispatch reporter and columnist. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU today comes from the Friends of the Broad Street Presbyterian Church, located on the web at bspc.org.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us. Tuesday night at 10 on WOSU TV, Frontline goes behind closed doors at the White House, in Congress, and the boardrooms of giant healthcare lobby to examine the political battles and costly compromises that defined President Barack Obama's endeavor. It's a sobering expose of the realities of American politics, the power of special interest groups, and the role of money in policymaking. Watch Obama's Deal on Frontline Tuesday night at 10 on WOSU TV. 60 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today, a high of 68. A few clouds tonight, a low of 45. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Lee Leonard, author of A Columnist's View of Capitol Square, Ohio Politics and Government from 1969 to 2005. Lee was a columnist for many, many years, first for the UPI and then for the Dispatch. How did column writing change over time? Or was it always looking for that nugget that illuminated kind of the backstory on things?
Well, for me, it only changed because I got better at it. Some of the columns in the book are, when they're back in the late 60s and early 70s, they seem rather stilted or amateurish to me now. But and then I went through a period when I wrote too much inside baseball, and I learned to get away from that because we get caught up writing basically for each other because, you know, the reporters see each other's columns, and you tend to try to do too much inside stuff when you should be. And you should be seeing your audience out there. And later on, I got back to writing for the reader. And how has it changed? It didn't – for me, I always tried to – I didn't try to do too many opinion columns. It was more analysis and more commentary. I would try to bring out the side of an issue. It always dealt, or almost always dealt, with something that had happened during the week because I wrote it on Friday for Monday's paper.
At the last minute?
Yeah.
Were you a column procrastinator?
I gathered string through the week, yeah, and to make sure that I didn't get caught on deadline. If push came to shove, I could spin a column in an hour, but and normal length would have been 2 hours, but that presumed that I had already made my phone calls and I had my material. So I tried to deal with something that happened during the week and bring out an element of it or a side of it that hadn't been explored in the regular daily news stories, and I thought that was more of a service than it was to, you know, you read these columnists on a regular basis in the Dispatch or in another paper, and you always know what they're going to say. You always know who they're going to hammer. You always know who they're going to prop up. But I tried to be a little bit unpredictable.
And you were. You know, I was a columnist for the Toledo Blade when I was covering the legislature for several years, and the challenge was, as I was covering the legislature, I was a reporter, so I couldn't say whether I thought that medical marijuana was a good idea or not, the legalization of medical marijuana. Maybe it was more fun to talk about the characters behind the scenes. Was that inside baseball, or does that maybe flesh things out for people who...
Certain procedural things, you told why they were doing it this way, but you didn't want to get too much into detail. I remember someone telling me one time, a friend of mine, that in very gentle terms that I didn't really understand what you were writing about, and that was a
yeah,
harpoon. But
that,
yeah, you wanted to tell the inside stuff. And why do things work the way they do? And why do they do it this way? And I think that's helpful, although most people, they already have a preconceived idea about how things ought to be. And if it's not that way for them, they don't like whoever's doing that. And, our government people have always been under the microscope, and they've always been viewed as the bad guys. And in certain cases, I tried to show people that all government folks aren't on the take. They're there to do a job.
All lobbyists are not.
Yeah, that's true, too.
In fact, there's some really noble.
Yeah. And when you get down to it, reporters and news people like us basically have made the public very cynical because we were very cynical. And now it's the system is almost broken because of that, I think.
When I first started covering the legislature, you know, all you can do is ultimately write about, particularly in a column, you know, what surprises you, what sticks out for you ultimately. I mean, that's all you can do is write about what you know and what occurs to you personally. There's, of course, a temptation when you're a new reporter to try to do like Lee Leonard or, you know, be like a Joe Hallett or do that. And it's never going to be authentic that way. And one of the things – so you find your little things to harp on occasionally. And one of mine was people – can't think of his name right now, but there was one who introduced hundreds of bills every year. That was
the guy that strikes my name. Mine is Ron Model.
It wasn't Ron Model, but yeah,
he would introduce 40 or 50 bills, and you know, introduction of a bill is basically meaningless.
And then they'd slap it on their campaign literature.
Right.
So, you know, sponsored a bill. Well, mm-hmm. Sponsoring a bill is like, you know.
Right. It's what you do afterwards.
Yeah. It. Yeah. It's a vending machine when it comes to bills.
Yeah. And leadership will give them bills. They'll give the weak ones bills just so they can have something to put on their campaign literature. And these will be people who don't know anything about the subject they're introducing, but, oh, let's give Joe Smith a bill so that he'll have something to campaign on.
That actually did move and go somewhere.
But then there are the legislators who have ideas about how things ought to be changed for the better. They introduce a bill. They work them through the legislature. Those are the good legislators that ought to be promoted and talked about and their exploits ought to be made known.
They actually hold hearings.
Yeah, they actually go to individual legislators, explain their bill, and try to get their vote. It's work.
Besides the fact that there's term limits, first of all, let's talk about term limits. How much did that change things?
Well, at first, it didn't change them all that much because
they didn't go into effect at first.
Yeah, that's right. It took a while because the leadership had some experience. And even in the Senate now, President Bill Harris has been around, I think, since 1993. He's either been in the House or Senate. So that's 17 years. But it's getting fewer and fewer of them, except our friend Batchelder has been there for a long time, and he's the minority leader. But there's also a Speaker of the House that had only been in the House one term, 2 years before he became Speaker. Now, that in the old days would have been unheard of. And but the mode of operation didn't change that much, and as far as I can see, it still hasn't changed. You protect your members. You try to give them things so that they'll be able to campaign on, and you keep the majority. There's very little talk about what is best for the people of Ohio. It's we're the House Democrats, and we're going to do what we think is best to keep our majority. We're the Senate Republicans, and they're in the majority. They do what they think is best. Now they adhere to their party's philosophy, but basically it's we're going to do what we can to assure that we keep control.
How much do you think that's echoing? Well, it's been that way for a long, long time. There's nothing new about that, but there seems to be, as far as keeping control or getting control. Now, as soon as I say that, I think, well, wait a minute. There were days back when Vern Reif was in control of the House, when it didn't seem like the Republicans, except for, say, the Bill Batchelders, who were, you know, voices in the wilderness, the Republican, caucus leadership didn't really seem to be fighting hard to take control.
But the thing about Vern, and he's a legend, is that he held his enemies close, his political enemies.
Mm-hmm.
He would have them
be part.
Yeah, you would put your arm around them and maybe throw a few scraps to them. And then they wouldn't be fighting so hard. That was one of the secrets of his success. Make them be part of the solution. And then they can't go out and complain. And so, yes, they scrap against each other publicly. But the votes meant everything. And the Republicans knew that they could not do what they wanted to. But by behaving in a certain way, they could get certain things into the legislation. Now it's just let's stand across the aisle from each other and scream and holler and use our battle weapons.
There's term limits, and then there's just the times, and they seem, as the word, I love using the word rancorous, they seem meaner, tougher than they were back then. And that's happening in Congress as well as in the State House. There's nothing, I don't know if they're related or not, partly perhaps, but there's no term limits in Congress.
Yes, that's correct. And it's the same. There's and a lot of the congressional people came out of the legislature, especially the people from Ohio. I mean, look at the John Boehner. He was
good
in the
John
legislature.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and he's got the same dang tan he had, you know, back. It's changed color. Yeah, he used to sit back in the back of the. This now, of course, smoking was allowed, but he was always smoking. He was always sitting back there. And it is interesting to see him up there now, you know, mm-hmm. in leadership in Congress.
Yeah. And some of them don't hit their stride until they reach the United yeah. States Congress.
There are others, lots of others. George Voinovich is getting ready to retire.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Kasich was in right. Congress for a long time. He was first in the Ohio Senate, then he was in Congress. Yeah. Now he's going to run for governor, and who knows, he might even be governor.
Does the governor's race echo previous governor's races? Does it sound the same? Is it the same sort of, or is it different?
Well, the last time it was Ted Strickland and Ken Blackwell, and it was going to be, this is the classic Republican versus Democrat. Now, yeah, I think you sort of have the classic Republican versus Democrat. Kasich is trying to cut down the size of the government and lower the taxes. And Strickland is trying to make sure that the public services don't make out all right under the fiscal conditions that we have today.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Lee Leonard, retired UPI and Dispatch reporter and columnist, talking about past, present, and maybe future because, you know, things will always – they always seem to change, but then they always seem to stay the same. It does seem to be the same discussion, governor's race after governor's race. However, I remember back in 91 when George Voinovich was running for his first term in the governor's office, or it was 90, I guess, and they talked about all the things they were going to do for the state of Ohio. And every time I walked away from one of those press conferences, and there were many of them that year, they had spent another $1 billion or so. Those were the olden days. Those are the good old days.
Right now you can't make promises because, first of all, people won't believe them, and nor should they believe them. And there isn't any money to spend. It's all a matter of holding your own. And now we're going to have a race where the governor wants to figure out a way to hold – for Ohio to hold its own to try to get the business regenerated again. And then John Kasich is coming in with his agenda to control the size of government, maybe even reduce it. There was a plan 4 or 6 years ago by Jim Petro, a Republican, and he had a plan to consolidate the state government. And so maybe they're going to bring that out again.
Well, there's one they want to consolidate 20-something agencies into
mm-hmm.
a couple dozen.
Petro's was going to be 11, I think. 11
and they have their commissions and they appoint commissions and study commissions and that sort of thing because, of course, you just don't go in and do something like that willy-nilly. And really it's only been achieved once, not the commission, but they combined well, there's Jobs and Family Services now. It used to be the Ohio Bureau of Employment Services and Human Services. And it's the gigantic agency that doesn't necessarily employ that much fewer people.
I think that was a big mistake when it was done.
That was Bob Taft, right?
It was Bill Harris who was the chief sponsor of that. He's now the president of the Senate. And it seemed like a good idea at the time, but I don't think it turned out very well.
And they worked on it for 2 or 3 years before it was launched.
Yes, it took quite a while. And it would take quite a while to reform the mechanics of government, as John Kasich wants to do.
Well, one of the things he suggested, and now he's kind of backed off of that, is to, is it repeal or start to cut back on
Well, I think it's to phase it down.
Phase it. That's right. Phase it down. The income tax.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose ultimately to eliminate it altogether. Several years ago they said we're going to cut the percentage by 20% over 5 years. Well, they didn't get the fifth year in because they needed the revenue this past year.
One, yeah.
But they did cut it four times. And, you know, that took 4 years and it only went down. I doubt that even people realize now, here we are at tax time. I don't think people are looking and saying, hey, my taxes, I've noticed that they're much lower now than they used to be. And that was only a total of 20%. Under the Kasich plan, I think they would go down even further.
Well, I mean, there's always the idea that they've been cutting funding from the local government fund to local governments for quite a while now, well over 10 years. They've been paring it little by little by little. And so our taxes are going up at the local level.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, the taxes at the local level, I think Ohio compares with other states. Our local taxes are higher than most other states, but our state taxes are lower. In fact, there was just an article in the Dispatch mm-hmm. not too long ago where Ohio ranks in the 33rd or 35th in state taxes per capita. And everyone has a perception that Ohio's – not everyone, but a lot of people think that Ohio's taxes are high. But if you look around at other states and talk to people who live there, Ohio's taxes are not high compared to other states, and especially major states.
Well, yeah, the infrastructure that you have to maintain in a state like Ohio or New York or California or
The infrastructure and also the pockets of poor people and in the major cities. And people say, well, that shouldn't make any difference. But it does make a difference. There are so many more services that are needed in big urban areas. And Ohio has probably more major cities than most other states.
Which always makes politics interesting as well.
Well, that's right.
We have to take a break right now. My guest is Lee Leonard, retired UPI and Dispatch reporter and columnist. If you have a question or a comment, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back at All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
The next Fresh Air, Peter Wolf on his life and music career, including fronting the Jay Giles Band and getting to know some iconic blues musicians.
James Cotton would cook up all sorts of chicken, and Muddy would tell Howlin' Wolf, hey, you know, there's this young guy has an apartment, so he would come by. John Lee Hooker would come by, and they would just all hang.
Wolf has a new solo CD. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Join the conversation and be a part of our studio audience as WOSU Public Media hosts a town hall forum. Moderated by WOSU's Ann Fisher, panelists and audience participants will discuss the issues that face one of our community's most vibrant neighborhoods, the Short North. The one-hour televised forum will be held on April 22nd at 6 p.m. at the Battelle Studios at WOSU at COSI. To be a part of the live studio audience, call 688-3777 or visit wosu.org/Columbus Neighborhoods.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
60 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 68, clouds tonight, a low of 45. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Lee Leonard, retired UPI and Dispatch reporter, former colleague of mine at the State House. We covered the state legislature, state government, politics, the whole kit and caboodle together. And I was just asking Lee if he missed it. Sometimes I miss it. You said every once in a while you say, oh, that might be fun to cover. I was thinking that about medical marijuana. That's always that was always interesting. But you're telling me that the first time you remember it popping up was back in the 70s, or at least anything to do with marijuana decriminalization.
Well, it was in that Vietnam era, and when a lot was going on, it was I didn't get here till the end of the 60s, but the 60s mentality was still going on. And there was a freshman representative named Ed Orlett, and he wanted to reduce the penalty for marijuana to a minor misdemeanor, which was a $100 fine and no jail term. And I think they eventually got that into law, but Ed was on the cutting edge of that. And then it was interesting because in this morning's paper there was an article about legislation on medical marijuana, and lo and behold, the name of Ed Orlett pops up. So here's has been 40 years later, Ed is still in there lobbying for the medical marijuana. At that time, he was a legislator. Now he's a lobbyist on Capitol Square.
Some things change. Sometimes they don't. So it's every 20 years because that popped up back. The medical marijuana popped up in the 90s and was debated for quite a while, but eventually shot down. And now it's back, but this time with about 73% of the public saying they support some sort of medical marijuana provision in Ohio law. But lawmakers are still saying, we don't think so.
There were what the story said about this was that some legislators are leery of it because they still think that no matter what their constituents think on a survey, that it might not be very good for them to come out in favor of this bill because they other people might in their district they have to pay attention to what people in their district think, that they might not go along with that.
How do lawmakers, in your opinion, decide what their constituents want?
Well,
how do they figure that out?
A lot of them go to meetings at home. Their schedules are quite full, actually. A lot of them go to meetings. They go to the Farm Bureau. They go to union meetings. They go to council meetings. They're out and about. These are the good ones. Their sensors are up. They consult with local officials, and they keep the pulse of their constituents, and they read just like anyone. I'm sure they read, and now they probably look at the internet and find out what people are talking about.
And they text and they Twitter and they Facebook and.
Yeah, and so there's no excuse for them not to know what their constituents think. And the question is, are they going to do what their constituents want, or in certain cases, are they going to be leaders and take and do what ought to be done? There's two schools of thought. You're a good legislator if you obey your constituents and do what they tell you to do, or when you get here, you're only one of 99 or one of 33 in the Senate. And that's the beauty of Ohio. It's so diverse. Are you able to think in terms of the overall state, what's good for the overall state rather than what's good for your district? You might pay a penalty because the people in your district might not think that's a good idea. But the leaders are the ones who take a problem and they try to come up with a solution that's good for the people at large.
You know, over that 40-year span, is there one example of the greater good coming to the fore that stands out for you?
You struck me right in the eye there. I do not.
I hear people talk about the savings and loan crisis. They just.
Well, yeah.
Governor was given a lot of credit for that too. But
well, they got their act together out of fear because on that one. When you first posed that question, I was thinking, well, what was there?
Something that they did proactively without having to react to it, yeah.
But when a problem comes up, in that case, this was in 1985, and the state chartered savings and loans went belly up, and they got themselves together out of fear because people were losing money, and their constituents were losing money. Anybody who had money in home state, which was essentially the strong point, was in southwestern Ohio, although there were home state banks in central Ohio too. That they got themselves together out of fear that their friends were going to be losing money, not just their friends, but the people they represented. And they got a solution to it.
It was all they did for a long, long time. When I first joined Joe Hallett down at the Toledo Blade Bureau, there was a big pile of papers stuff in a corner. I said, "What's that?" He goes, "That's home state."
Yeah, I had a file that was about a foot thick on that also.
It was a lot more than a foot, no offense, Joe. If you want to talk to Lee Leonard, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Alan's on the line right now. Alan, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to ask Lee Leonard, who has, in his opinion, the most effective politician that he's known, not the most popular, but the most effective politician he's known, governor, legislator, whoever?
Well, the first answer to that question would be James A. Rhodes, who was governor for four terms, and he was a Republican. He was a practical Republican, not a party line Republican or an ideological Republican. But then there was Speaker Vern Reif, who maintained his majority position for 20 years as Speaker. And as I say in one spot in the book, I think he may even have superseded Rhodes as a politician, and that's what you asked, who was the best politician. Vern Reif, for all that had to be done to control a 100-member House and make sure that he stayed in the majority, that to me was a larger feat than Jim Rhodes. But Rhodes certainly was a political governor, and he's a legend. Both of them are legends.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Alan. How did Vern do that? You said he was the kind of he took care of people on both sides of the aisle.
He not only took care of people on both sides of the aisle, but he was a student. He actually, long before he became Speaker, and we were talking about the guy who became Speaker after one term, Vern was here for at least 10 years before he even got into the leadership. And then that was only in the Democratic caucus. Then he took over as Speaker. But he had learned all these lessons. And one of the ways he learned them was by going over to the Neal House at night and consulting over alcoholic beverages with a lot of the Columbus community power structure and the elite, and they would swap yarns, and he would learn things, and he learned where all the power levers were, and he learned about other parts of the state, which most people, here's a guy from Scioto County, what does he care what goes on in Akron?
Was he part of the Cornstalk Brigade?
Yes.
Is that what you call? Okay.
He was part of the Cornstalk Brigade, but only because most of the Cornstalkers were from outlying areas that were Republican. But Scioto County is a big Democratic county. But it didn't matter to him. It was, what do the people want? What do they need in Akron, Toledo, Dayton, Youngstown? And he knew these things, and he got to be familiar with what can I do for them so that they'll do for me. And that was Rhodes' secret too. It's always make somebody else obligated to you so that then they will do something for you when you want it. And that's how they maintain power.
Why couldn't that power translate to statewide politics, to running for a statewide office? Because I know he wanted to.
Because he, for all that he actually did for his legislators that came from Toledo, Akron, Dayton, and Cleveland, that never transferred over in terms of personal identification. He didn't really have a power base. And so when you talked about Vern Reif in Cleveland, everything that he helped Cleveland with was in the name of one of the Cleveland legislators, so that nobody said, oh, here's the Vern Reif Tower or the Vern Reif University. He just never had a power base big enough to go statewide.
Is that pretty true? You know, someone like, say, Lee Fisher went from the Senate to the Attorney General's office and has been, you know, obviously he's Lieutenant Governor now running for the U.S. Senate. But how many of them get to a statewide position? Not very often.
Not very many. And, you know, it took Lee Fisher a while. He, yes, he ran for Attorney General and he was,
won by 1,234
yeah,
votes.
We know that. 1, 2, 3, 4 votes. And then he lost the next time. But still, he remained in it. And he's a good campaigner and a good fundraiser, and that's how he keeps on top of it. He lost the governor's race in 1998, but still, he's out and about. But he's a rare exception to the rule of that you can go from the legislature and then run for statewide office.
614-292-8513. If you want to talk with Lee Leonard and Demsis, you're on the line. You want to talk about redistricting?
Yeah. What the speaker was saying resonated with me based on the fact that politicians do whatever it takes to stay in power and keep that power going rather than what their constituents want. And I feel like one avenue in which they do so is redistricting the line in order to maintain that power. What can we do about that? Because I know the census is going on right now. Mm-hmm. That's a big aspect of it. But as constituents, what can we do?
There are two ways that redistricting is done. For the United States Congress, that is the House of Representatives, the legislature does that. And for the state legislature, those boundaries are drawn by a special board that consists of the auditor, the secretary of state, and the governor, and two legislators. There's a five-member board. And the caller is correct that this has been poisoned throughout the years because whoever controls those things, either the legislature in the case of drawing the congressional lines or the apportionment board in terms of the legislative lines, whoever controls those bodies, they draw the lines to benefit themselves the most. Now, there has been a movement to get an independent commission to do that job, but it had to be put to the voters because it's in the Constitution how these things are done. And so far, they've been unable to pass those plans where an independent board would do it. And you would think in this age of technology that they could draw precise mathematical districts and not have to have politics be a part of it. There are some people who say it's good. They need to have politics involved, and there will always be politics involved. But I think that they could draw them so that the districts were more competitive. The bad part is they draw these districts where they're 70% Democrat or 70% Republican, and there's never a chance for the minority person to win those districts.
Which means they don't even try, which means there's not the debate over the issues that—
Right, and that means they can pour that much more money into other districts, into the competitive ones, of which there are very few. So that's why the outrageous sums of money are spent.
That help, Demsis?
Yes, it did help. And the reason why I brought it up is that I know voting is a very important civic aspect and duty, but I just kind of feel like, to a certain extent, one can only do so much based on the rules and the application of the rules. I just kind of wanted to see what different avenues that, as a constituent, I could take in regards to making things fair and balanced. So,
well, if you ever hear of a board that or of a movement that's going to create an independent board, get out there and support it, because and it'll have to go to the ballot. So get out there and campaign for it. In fact, I think John Husted, who's the Republican candidate for Secretary of State, at one point, I don't know if he still is going to do this, he wanted to abolish the Secretary of State's role in governing elections, or he wanted to, didn't he want to reverse the process of redistricting so that it could be changed? I might not be right about that, but it seems to me he wanted to straighten that system out.
But, and I think he still does. He wants to change it. But Jennifer Bruner, you know, who's now leaving the Secretary of State's office, giving it up to run for the U.S. Senate in the primary, did too.
Okay. So they both want
to. Well, it depends. I mean, there's all kinds of variations on the theme about how to restructure it. But one thing is I thought that John Husted wanted to get rid of that power that the Secretary of State has to break ties and different, you know, to eliminate that much power in the elections process, mm-hmm. and make it less of an elections office. So, Demsis?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
You know, I wanted to save a few minutes to talk about Tom Moyer, the late Tom Moyer. He died last week, or the week before last, I guess, when I was gone.
And he died on Good Friday.
Right, Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court.
And, very shocking.
Very shocking. And, you know, I guess I remember him being sort of that quiet, calm guy when I first started covering the Supreme Court, when Andy Douglas and Craig Wright were wrestling in the hallways back then in the day. What is your memory of Tom Moyer?
Well, you're right. He did come in at a time when the court was very fractious, and people have been pointing out that that was under the reign of Frank Celebrezze, who was a Democrat. But Craig Wright and Andy Douglas were Republicans, so they were the ones who were kicking up their heels. And actually, Tom was a leveling influence when he got to be the Chief Justice. I still wonder about whether the Chief Justice should be separately elected, because why should somebody come in off the street and become Chief Justice? Shouldn't they have to be a justice first? Well, they don't. But anyway, Tom came in, and yes, everyone, he gets high marks for getting the court to act in concert and eliminating a lot of that fractious stuff. Also, of trying to take the money out of court races, they put a limit on how much you could spend in those races, and that was after that terrible 2000 campaign when with the scales of justice, mm-hmm. yeah, when money was poured in. So yes, and he also had a reputation of being very fair on things.
He wasn't too much of an, you know, you never got the sense of an ideologue. I mean, they were Republicans and Democrats, but then that wasn't supposed to be an issue. But you never got that feeling from him at all.
Right. He concentrated on the law. What does the law say? Let's interpret the law. Now, he normally interpreted it according to the way a Republican would. But then you'd say, well, he won the election, so why not?
Tom Moyer. May he rest in peace. He was a great guy to cover.
Yes.
Lee Leonard, thanks for joining me again for another hour on the show. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having
me. Hope you'll come back
again. We had a good time.
Yeah. Yes. And hope you enjoyed listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Tech Columbus, presenting the 2010 Innovation Summit on May 27th. Executives and industry thought leaders will explore new thinking about innovation and leadership. More at TechColumbusInnovationSummit.com.